Hello, lovely podcast people. So back for part two of this guest appearance of mine. And this is the one where I do talk a lot more about aggressive dieting. I talk about some of that research behind people feeling less hungry with lower calories. It's counterintuitive, but it's what all the data is showing us. And the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who I've anecdotally helped with this have said the same. And on top of that, talking about some considerations if you're using it as a tool. And then finally talk about a key area of the calculator. The calculator is actually, there's actually kind of three calculators now, all serving different functions for different people, different goals, different times in their dieting process. And one of the key things is what to do after the diet, what to do with refeeds, what to do with diet breaks, what to do with a maintenance diet. And it's very, very important and something the industry doesn't discuss enough. And I don't even think I did it as well as I should have done in this podcast, but in my seminar, I do it very well with regards to something I'm terming positive weight regain. And if we don't discuss that with clients, even after a normal diet, you know, a moderate calorie deficit diet, if you don't discuss positive weight regain, or even discussing weight regain positively, which are two different things. Positive weight regain is regaining of lean body mass, regaining of non-fat mass tissue, non-fat mass elements of our total body weight that isn't discussed. So people get discouraged because, oh, I've put on a couple of pounds. Yes, of course you flipping have. Just because your dietary volume has increased, you've increased your water stores in lean areas of the body, etc., etc. So an important discussion. If any of you guys are coaches, maybe something for you to talk about on your social media. You're welcome. Anyway, hope you enjoy it. Like I said before, get yourself on my email lists, get yourself on my I'll link them in the bio so that you can potentially attend one of my seminars in the UK, in the US, potentially Toronto, Dubai. Any of you guys in Ireland, you always DM me after I say stuff like this. This time, you know, I came to Dublin whenever it was, just literally last year. I'm going to do one in London and probably one in Loughborough at our conference room here in MNU HQ. And so you can easily fly to London, you can easily fly to East Midlands. And it's cheaper for everyone. The flights there cost about a tenth of the cost of a single night hotel room in the crazy city that is Dublin these days. What a joke. Anyway, without further ado, much love. You obviously know that I talk a lot about aggressive dieting or very large calorie deficits simply because the research is so positive. How do I phrase this well? Dieting is actually quite... The research on effective dieting and weight loss maintenance in the long term is bleak. People very, very regularly regain weight. And, but with aggressive dieting, it's less bleak. And so people are like, why, you know, you're talking about these massive calorie deficits. And I'm like, I'm not making money. Like, I don't make money by people eating less. It's not, I don't have a business on this. I don't have a shake that I sell people or anything like that. It's just, I'm the messenger for this research. And this research is showing that weight loss maintenance, you know, clinically meaningful weight loss after 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, 7 years. And we have these studies, you know, people go, oh, the studies are only 6 months long. No, they're not. Like, you just haven't read enough studies. Shut the hell up and go and read. Like, they're all there. The, you know, 5 and 10% clinically meaningful levels of weight loss from a health perspective and you know, all cause mortality. Aggressive dieting just blows moderate calorie deficits out of the water. And then people go, oh, but it's going to slow your metabolism. Not true. Like, go find the study. It's not there. It's not a thing. Oh, it means you're going to lose all your muscle. The studies aren't there. If you're a super lean athlete, you know, a coach listening to this podcast, like, yeah, if you're already really lean, like, don't do an aggressive diet because you will lose some muscle. But then again, I have this whole thing of like, well, you lose a bit of muscle,
you're just going to regain it back really quick. So, you know, swings and roundabouts. So, you know, from this perspective of what do we do, there's just so many things of finding what we can do that's going to help us manage. The other thing I wanted to say is hunger. Like, that's another crazy thing. Eating, you know, myself, I eat 1,000 calories a day when I do these aggressive diet periods, plus or minus 200. And my hunger is way less than on a 1,500, 1,600, 1,800, 2,000. That, you know, all of those figures would put me in a calorie deficit, and I'm the least hungry on 1,000. People are like, what? It doesn't make sense. And it doesn't. I get it. But one, that's what the research says. And two, try it. It's crazy. So with regards to females, what I will say is there's so little difference in what we know should be done. So people, in terms of like, oh, do women, a different macro split, for instance, people big into macro splits, people are, you know, somatotyping, like, oh, ectomorphs should be in 57.5% carbohydrate and mesomorphs, and blah, it's just absolute rubbish, made up. And then again, you get the same thing for women. And, you know, people say, making these claims, and they're just not there. You know, there's a very well-known female physiologist on Instagram. I'm not going to name her again. She just says such gimpish stuff. And people love her because she does say some good things, and she's got some good understanding of female physiology. But she just says stuff like, well, in this phase of the menstrual cycle, your respiratory quotient changes and you're burning more fat. So in those times, you should change your diet, this, that. That's not evidence-based. Those things, it's a little bit like the arguments around fasted cardio. Oh, okay, if I exercise in the morning first thing, my respiratory exchange ratio is closer to one, which means I'm burning more fat during that session. Oh, it's better for fat loss. But actually, what happens when you go to 24-hour, over a 24-hour period, it just equalizes. And again, we come back to what you said, like, energy balance, calories, like, you can't get away from it. All the different stupid diets come back to that if you're losing fat. And it, what fuel source you're burning also doesn't matter in an acute sense, because longitudinal weight loss is going to come from fat. You know, even if you initially start burning some muscle glycogen because you're doing high intensity training, you'll then go back to a more fat burning. I think I said that wrong. I think 0.7 is actually more fat. I can't remember my respiratory exchange ratios, but it doesn't matter for anyone listening.
I think most people listening wouldn't know that you actually lose body fat via a gaseous exchange by breathing anyway. So.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah. I shouldn't worry about it, should I? But yes. So going to this thing. So for women, the one thing that I would say is, And I started saying this loads on my tour in 2019, and it's been kind of cool to see other coaches pick it up. Like, you know, had a good few thousand coaches come to my tour, even though I was really aiming, a little bit like you with this podcast, like you're like really trying to provide for, I believe, like a female population of sort of clientele jump up. But you'll get loads of coaches listening because it kind of, they hear it and it's helpful. Yeah. That kind of is what my tour ended up being. It literally was like 50-50 coaches and then 50-50 gen pop who wanted the information. So it's been cool to see people doing this with this information. But during the menstrual cycle, and I always sort of make a joke on, well, you will have seen the joke, but I'm like, you know, that week. And I'm like, men, you know, that week, right? When she's on that week. And then like, look at the women, like, you know, that week when you're really annoying. But, you know, women's TDEE, total daily energy expenditure, goes up. Their metabolism increases in that week. And most, it's very, very different for different women, which is interesting. But for a lot of women, they find their appetite really ramps up in that week as well. And so, but people don't realize that's actually probably likely driven by this increase in energy flux out. And so the body is sort of increasing its appetite. And so the problem is during that week, one, you have major mood disturbances, you have a change in, you know, lots of women will report cravings, you know, a very difficult term to define, but we're all happy using the term. And, you know, let's say someone's using the old school, I'm going to call it old school. Nah, we'll call it contemporary 500 calorie deficit per day. But then their metabolism's increased by 100, maybe 200, whatever. It's between 1 and 300. It depends on the individual, the size of it, all those things. But your metabolism increased slightly, but your appetite has also really gone up during that week, and your all these other factors that women have to deal with. And I talk about, well, you could, as much as periodization of nutrition, where people are going, you know, you should eat this many carbs in this week and that many grams of fat in that week, and you should do this with your protein and whatever, they aren't really evidence-based and we don't know that yet. But what someone can genuinely do is don't diet during that week. And I even say this for, if it was a male client or a female client without a menstrual cycle or whatever, if your client was reporting mood disturbance, massive increases in hunger, I had a really stressful period in my life. I think I said this at the tour, didn't I? But I just, for the first time ever, I felt the urge to eat for emotional comfort. And typically when I'm stressed, I don't eat. And I just, oh, you know, nice side effect of being super stressed. I just, my abs have got better. But, you know, if you have a client reporting that, but when you have such a consistent thing, like, yes, that's good coaching. But when you should have almost this, what's my starting point for, you know, if you are a female client listening to this podcast, what's my starting point? Or you're someone coaching these people, what's my starting point? Let's have a discussion about that. Like, it's championed on social media. Like, we need to talk more about periods. Like, men need to be more comfortable talking about it, this, that, and the other. And, you know, I fully agree. And being able to have those conversations, like the other difficult one as a young nutritionist, like talking about people's bowel habits, like, oh, I'm, you know, stalled. And you're just like, for me, it was like one of those things, oh, I was happy to talk about periods, but that was always something like talking about people's bowel movements. It was, I don't know. I just,
that's where you draw the line.
Yeah, like, it wasn't, but it was always one that I just was like, oh, don't know. It just made me feel weird, but I'm a bit repressed in that way, maybe. So, but yeah, your starting point from there should go, right, let's have a conversation. Do they know what that week's like? Because the other thing to say is, which makes it being sucky, being a woman trying to lose weight, is body water fluctuations are massive, and hormonal related water retention. But like, I've had athletes, like, you know, a lot of my career was as a performance nutritionist for weight making sports. And so we, you know, for female athletes, we really had to dial this in. And again, maybe another reason I was so comfortable, because that, you know, that was my first job as a fresh out of my master's and postgraduate. It was like, right, working with elite level females in weight making sports. And it was, I had to get comfortable with it quickly and understand it quickly and work with these people and listen to them and track these markers and, you know, understanding, you know, and it's amazing. I can still remember one. You know, she's a very, very good weightlifter. We got it down to such a T that we could go, that will be the date that this will happen to your body weight. And just that her weight would just fall off a cliff there and then it would build up there. And she wouldn't see the fruits of her labors of a deficit making weight in this week. And we wouldn't freak out because we knew it was going to happen. And once you get to that point, because even as someone who doesn't struggle with this, if I'm like aggressive dieting and like a couple of days the scales don't go down, because on an aggressive diet it's motivating, every day they go down, and they don't for 2 days, I'm like, what's the point? I hate my life. So imagine that's like every week.
I'm of hungry and the scale's not going
yeah,
down.
Yeah, yeah. Every week of every month. So I think that is my one thing for you, that you said to like just touch on anything female. That would probably be, off the top of my head, the only thing really I'll talk about massively is a consideration around, actually maybe you're only dieting 3 out of every 4 weeks, or plus or minus based on different cycle lengths.
No, I absolutely love that. I think more females do really need to learn to not necessarily compare the week to the previous week. Obviously, there's definitely some re-evaluation process that can happen on a weekly basis, but definitely need to learn to compare that same phase in the cycle to the same part in the following cycle.
Yeah.
Or previous cycle, because we're reevaluating, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about aggressive dieting, if that's okay, Mark. So you open up social media these days, it's slow and steady wins the race. Yeah. Diets need to be sustainable, which by definition has never made sense to me, because eventually you weigh nothing and die. Yeah. So that doesn't make sense. So when you said a few things that you did in your Dublin tour, it was really interesting because it validated a lot of things that I have kind of come to conclusions myself with my own dieting experience with clients. A few things that I've seen in the research, but I hadn't really heard kind of as much as you went into. So yeah, just tell me a little bit about why more aggressive dieting actually can be a really useful tool for people, and how it's not actually an issue for hunger, adherence, etc.
Yeah, so where to start with this? I think, so I started talking about this in 2015. I was asked to do a talk for a really large group of personal trainers who I knew had actually been educated quite well. And, you know, my whole career before that, I could walk into a room and go, do you know what? You can eat bread and it doesn't make you fat. And people are like, no, oh, mind blown. Or like, you don't have to eat a low fat diet to be healthy. No, like, so you go into a room like that and I'm like, I love to like teach, but also just like people be super interested, like teach them something new and cool and make it exciting. And so I was like, what am I going to talk to this group about? And basically I had seen stuff discussed in their sort of area, where anyone who recommended anything over the kind of 500 to 1,000 calorie deficit was like really almost shamed, like, oh, you're a maverick. And I was like, hold on, that's not what the research says. And there's this other thing of often coaches forget that they're not their clients. And so they, you know, coaches, like I think of myself as a client, like, I'm lazy. I don't live in the gym. I'm super inactive. Whereas, you know, people are just like, oh yeah, you know, I've done 20,000 steps today and I'm just in the gym all the time. Like trainers, just like they love the gym. Like I used to love the gym. I literally, the gym's so boring to me now. It's a means to an end very much for me. And so, but this thing of, coaching, who am I coaching? I'm coaching someone with a significant amount of body fat to lose. And that's who the research is done on. People who need to lose weight, not someone who's just like, oh, I want to like have shredded glutes. Like no one needs shredded glutes. But some people, for their health, potentially mobility and look, all these other things, fertility, just, you know, the whole realm, need to lose fat. And these people have significant fat stores to lose. And aggressive dieting, you know, when you look at the research, just like everything I've mentioned, what are the things that you would think if you were in a 1,500, 2,000, 2,500, 3,000 calorie deficit per day? So, like, what would people expect? Well, I'd expect to be ridiculously hungry. Well, let's look at the evidence. And just almost unequivocally across the board, we're comparing normal diets that we would be comfortable with, like you said, that the industry would be comfortable with, like slow and steady wins the race, to these super aggressive diets, like using as little as, I don't know, 390, 400 calories per day. And I talk about how I don't typically recommend that low, because I think we can do better than that. I think there's, you know, that comes from maybe more total meal replacement shake things that whatever. I think we can still get all of the benefits on, like I said, this thousand figure. And I've got this, I'm hopefully bringing out the sort of be all and end all calculator for people to work out their optimal aggressive diet based on, you know, the best evidence we currently have. So, you know, appetite. No, people's hunger is better managed. Okay, adherence. People won't be able to stick to it. Right, let's look at people who have struggled with weight all their life. Let's enroll these people into this research, you know, randomized control trial. People who struggle with their weight have, you know, are classified as overweight or obese or clinically obese. These are real people. This isn't some lab weird scenario. These are real people. These are your clients. And what happens? more of the clients in these super low, you know, very low calorie diet groups attend follow-up sessions. There is greater adherence to the program in that group. Like, it sounds too good to be true. And guess what happens to those people? Well, we do a 6-month study, a 24-week study, and the very low calorie group, guess how long they have to diet? 8 weeks, because they reach their goal. And then we look at the graphs, 8 weeks, and they just, boom, all the way to 24 weeks, and they just stayed there. And then the other group that was like, okay, we're just going to minus, I think it was like 25% of their calories. You know, that was their deficit, just 25%. And the graph is like, yeah, it comes down, and they've not lost nearly as much weight as the guys, and they've dieted 24 weeks. And then the other group is like 12.5% from reduction of calories, 12.5% from exercise expenditure, so we get the same deficit. Similar curve to the other one. But this group that only dieted for 8 weeks is ended up in a much better place at 6 months, and there was better adherence and all these great things. And so there's just lots of myths that it'll damage your metabolism. Like, not a thing. You know, or there'll be no behavior change. Well, no, we like, there can be no behavior change, but there can be no behavior change in a, I'm going to go and count points, I'm going to go and count calories, I'm going to download this app. That's not behavior change, and it's still a 500 calorie deficit. So it's not mutually exclusive. We can still do the coaching process using this sort of methodology. One thing I want to say, and I don't think I've ever said this publicly before, is one, I'm not against a 500 calorie deficit or slow and steady wins the race. And I do think a lot of people are not in a place where they should be dieting at all anyway. And so doing a 500 calorie deficit diet, which, to be honest, is it even 500? They, you know, they're underreporting by 300, so it's a 200 calorie deficit, and they don't really get anywhere. But they maybe start creating some slightly better habits with their lifestyle, and then whatever. You know, for those people, really, they don't have a good basis for eating, and so actually they join a program, whoever. And because I know there's some big names, people I like, people who I'm friends with, they do sell this thing of just like, don't eat 1,000 calories a day. That's crazy. And it, like, I'm like, oh, whenever I see it, I just sort of laugh to myself, like, oh, I really am just better than everyone else. I know everything. But I also go, for their audience, that's probably what they need.
It might be the right message there.
Because also people like trying to hate themselves into change. They're not following a good process. That 1,000 calories isn't made up of the right thing. That 1,000 calories isn't, you know, they don't understand the concept of unconditional permission to eat, et cetera, et cetera. So actually the 500, whatever, just improving habits. Before you go into any diet, you should have your exit plan / your maintenance / your habit, lifestyle habits. Like you said, it doesn't need to be sustainable, but your life needs to be sustainable. So you need to have them in line. So actually, yeah, if you start within a coaching program, they teach you all of these things. It's like, cool, that's hopefully going to be helpful to you for your weight maintenance. And then hopefully you'll find me and my podcast or whatever. You'll do an aggressive diet, and then you'll be in a better place to actually then maintain it long term. Yeah.
That's one of the most important parts of that, in my opinion. So what people don't seem to understand is that the percentage of the deficit or the severity of the deficit isn't necessarily what's correlated to any negatives as a result of dieting. So if you take that group you said, and they're dieting for 8 weeks, and there's a follow-up at 24 weeks, the group that only needed to be in a deficit for 8 weeks now has 16 weeks. I had to double check the maths in my head, and that's embarrassing. That group has 16 weeks to spend focusing on maintenance, building muscle tissue, whereas the other group spent 24 weeks in a deficit, which has all of the negatives that come with being in a deficit.
Mm. Yeah, and I can't remember who I heard say this. Oh, I was a guest on another podcast, and he said something that I was like, yeah, you've taken the words out of my mouth, which was essentially being in a 500 calorie deficit or a 1,000 calorie deficit, whatever, just sucks. Like, you're on a diet. Like, your goal is fat loss. What's that 500 calories to you? Like, that's, I don't know, roughly 2 less Snickers or chocolate bars, whatever, that you can't have every single day. Like, that's my tub of pick and mix or sweets that I just eat every single day that I can't have. And I could have them, but then I have to swap them for some of the potato I might have eaten, or oats or nuts or whatever. So I'm restricted. There's a level of restriction in my life. And you're doing that for 24 weeks. Whereas for 8 weeks, you're not having the pick and mix. You're not having the chocolate. You're not having the whatever you wanted as much. And you can have those things. Of course, we're not demonizing any of those foods. But as in, there has to be some level of sacrifice in any good goal endeavor. Like, you want to run a marathon, you need to watch less TV because you're going to be plodding outside in the rain and it sucks. Why are you doing that? I'd rather diet. But the, you know, the flip side of it is I'm only doing that for 8 weeks. I'm cutting those things out. But yes, I'm also having to cut out more of the potato, this, that, and the other. But the key thing to remember is, yeah, you're eating potato in your 500 calorie diet. I can't in my 500 calorie deficit diet. I can't fit potato in my 1,000 calories a day diet. You can eat a little bit more of that. I can't, whatever. But after 8 weeks, but I'm less hungry than you are. That is what the evidence, the research, whatever says. Or, you know, if I just take me A and me B doing the 500 calorie deficit, he's hungrier than A, and I'm getting all the results, and I'm more motivated, and I'm actually sticking to it, et cetera, et cetera. So it's just that I'm not trying to make people do this. I just want coaches to realize, like, get educated on it. Like, if I could stop time, I would write an aggressive dieting coach certification. I would teach people how to coach it well. I would, and quite frankly, like, I'm creating an aggressive dieting resource that's going to be free, and it's just going to, because I've done so much on it now, but it's kind of all over the place. So I'm creating a thing where it's just all in one place, signposted, so that people can just get a good full understanding before they might. And, you know, for coaches, that's probably a good thing that they could go learn from. It's just to not rule it out. Don't take it off the table. Like, it's the evidence is so strong. If you had to put your money in one pot, 500 calorie deficit diet or the aggressive diet, you'd be stupid based on research, like the body of literature, to pick anything other than aggressive dieting.
I actually did a poll on my stories after you said that.
Oh, did you?
Was like, you know, if you had 15 pounds to lose, 10 to 15 pounds to lose, would you rather it took 21 to 25 days or 10 to 14 weeks? Mm-hmm. And it was 50-ish votes for, you know, 20 to 25 days. And I think there was like 8 or 10 people that said 10 to 14 weeks, which still kind of surprised me.
Yeah.
I was like, why?
Why?
Yeah.
Because did you give them any more context?
It was literally just... I've got a talk coming up. This would be useful if you had this amount of weight to use. All other things equated, how long would you rather it took to?
Why did anyone vote for?
Yeah,
long
I don't get it either. So they've obviously associated their personal experience with dieting to that question, right?
Yeah. Of course, they've made some assumptions. Yeah.
So I need to do a follow up story and be like, "Hey, you ate weirdos.
Yeah.
Why did you? Here's, you know, some evidence, genuinely so, very yeah. We're just genuinely very curious as to why people would select the longer term. Mm. But one thing you said earlier, which I think is really important to touch on, because you'll often hear that, you know, rebuttal will be, oh, well, worse for someone's relationship with food, you know, and you'll go, well, then that person shouldn't be dieting at all, regardless of the deficit. And that's just such an important point. I wanted to just come back to that.
Yeah, you're right. It's probably top five rebuttal of aggressive deficits. The other one that I'll just mention is bone loss, because there's some cool stuff in... postmenopausal women, one of the better a really great study, Simon, that's the author, if anyone wants to go in, 2019, then done 2020, they've done good 3-year follow-up so far. Again, saying everything that I'm saying here, aggressive dieting absolutely blows small deficits out of the water in these women, but they've seen reductions in bone mineral density in the aggressive dieting group, but there's no resistance training in those groups. There's no elevated protein in those groups. There's no, all the things that we know support bone health. So it's just one of those things that I would go, yeah, 100%. It's good that we're paying attention to that. So what are we going to encourage, especially females in that group, to do? Impact, you know, stuff that personal trainers probably know about more than me. So, food relationship people just do equate, okay, the size of deficit is going to lead to a greater disordered pattern, a greater you know, my relationship with food is going to be worsened at these at a magnitude that is equivalent to my deficit. And it's just not a thing. Like, I get why people say it. I get why there's things, a bit like you just said, people maybe relate their experience to your question. People relate, oh, when I did my clean nine, forever living, BS, crap, whatever, I hated myself, I hated my life, I ended up binging as a result. Of course you did. You were drinking aloe vera 75 times a day. Like, of course, you came from such a bad place. But again, we can look at the literature. I'm trying to think of a good one of the better papers, but honestly, I can't, so that's annoying. But again, these things get studied in the literature, because we, in individuals who maybe have a lifelong experience of a weight gain, using some of the PC terms, like being in a larger body, maybe have experienced some kind of the weight stigma stuff, any bullying in their life, all these things. Lots of these individuals will have binge eating tendencies, whether it's binge eating disorder or whatever. So it's studied, it gets measured, it gets paid attention to. And I mean, I was surprised when I saw this, but then I'm like, you know, I just ponder it. I ponder the clients that have done this. I ponder the how I feel about it. You know, I ponder the, pathology of binging, the driving factor, some of the hedonic forces that are at play. Hunger is just this huge thing. You know, if you can make someone less hungry, and you know, there's this whole big discussion at the minute about weight loss injections, and you know, they help in these GLP-1 agonists that are helping people with appetite regulation. And whether people like it or not, combined with lifestyle interventions, they are really, really helpful.
Fantastic. What's the hate?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't really get it.
Yeah, we're very happy to use drugs for all sorts of things. But as soon as it's like, I'm a personal trainer with a six pack, I'm 21 years old with no girlfriend, no mortgage, no real job, and yep, I've got six packs, so why can't everyone be like me? Like, give over, mate. Like, obesity is not a disease. Like, oh yeah, I really give a crap about your opinion. Like, you're 10 years old. These things, being able to manage appetite, like, again, aggressive dieting, useful for this. But binging, you know, one of the things that we want to try and do is it with, this is, again, the binge eating self-help stuff. Like, I'm seeing some of the graduates get taught this and talking about it, but we know that sort of meal regularity and meal frequency for fat loss, like, oh, you don't have to be eating six times a day to boost metabolism. That's this big myth. You know, breakfast isn't like this most important meal of the day. If you skip breakfast, you're going to go into starvation mode. Also not a thing. But for individuals who struggle with these binge eating tendencies, we want to try and keep them away from getting really hungry and quote unquote losing control, for instance. And so, if you take hunger away, and I cannot explain, if no one's ever done this sort of diet, I cannot explain, I love sweets. Like, I'm a kid. And if people offer me sweets or chocolate or whatever, I'm like, yeah, 100% all the time. I'm just not one of these, you know, like these Instagram people, like, oh, I eat liver, I eat this, you know, these weirdos. I went through a time in my life where I was like really keen to just eat really well. And I was sort of like exploring the sort of paleo thing and exploring going back to whatever, just trying to, you know, I was like, I'm going to live forever, you know. And, you know, it's just not me now. Like I've got lots of good
habits.
Give
me all the pick and mix.
Yeah, give me all the pick and mix. And, and on a 500 calorie deficit, someone goes, do you want a donut? Do you want this? And I'm like, oh, I really, really want that. But doing an aggressive diet, you're like, I'm all right. Like, you know, my children, that's one of the tricky things. Like, you're making them chips. And you're like, oh, I love chips. Like, making them, you know, whatever, butter on toast with butter. And I'm like, oh, I love toast with butter. But when you're on an aggressive diet, your ability, so, this comes back to, like, really hardcore brain research. And I won't go into it, but we are in the fasted state for whatever reason. There's actually activation of certain areas of the brain which give us a greater ability to refrain from eating high calorie foods. And just like reading that research, you're like, that's crazy. I don't even really understand why, from an evolutionary perspective, that would be a thing. It's kind of crazy. But when you've experienced it, and then I'm not going, oh, I experienced this, so copy me. I'm basing this on the literature of just like thousands of data points, subjects, you know, millions of pounds and whatever of research funding have gone into this and shown this time and time again. So someone's not hungry, they don't binge as much. And this is what they're finding: reduced binge eating episodes, greater disinhibition, and just, reduced disinhibition of eating these high calorie, high density foods. So it doesn't happen. And I get that people think it. And if you're a coach who's like, listen to this going, this guy's a maverick, like go and do your research. Don't like try and call someone out. You know, I know what that's like. Like some young trainer like, oh, you're talking rubbish. Like, have you gone and read the research? You haven't. Go and read it. And you'll be surprised like I was, and then just stay teachable, because it's cool when you realize this stuff, more tools in your toolbox, you can help more clients. And realistically, that's what people should be here for, is like being, you know, either they're trying to help themselves, or we should be trying to help people and not fit them into our box of coaching or our values or whatever.
Yeah, no, I love that. I think, you know, we made a little joke earlier, it might not be the right message for certain audiences, but really the right message is always, here's all of the options. Mm. Here's what the research shows, which is this one's probably going to be better the majority of the time for the majority of people. And then you make an informed decision. And considering we do have such a problem with weight loss, weight gain statistics, I don't really understand why we're not having a conversation about this option being on the table. So I think that's an incredibly valuable episode, because people need to hear that is something that they can consider.
Mm. And one thing, sorry, I meant to say this earlier, that a study popped into my head that looked at weight loss maintenance. And I think this would be a really cool for lots of your coaches. And I should say this more. I might go do a post on this or story on this. People forget that when we look at weight regain statistics from, and this is another thing with regards to study groups and control groups. If you get a control group in a study that doesn't do anything, over the period of that 6-month study or 1-year study or 3-year study, they gain weight. So like as a population, we gain weight year on year. And a lot of that seems to happen around specific periods. It's not like this trend. It's like Christmas, Easter, yeah, whatever. So you get these sort of spikes over the year. But you go, weight loss research shows that just dieting's futile. Everyone just regains all the weight. And it's like, okay, now let's look at a study that used a control group. So this group dieted and regained the weight. Now, so then you go, well, it was useless. But then you get a better designed study that had a control group, and you go, oh, look, the control group is actually statistically significantly heavier, fatter than the group that dieted and actually regained. So again, it's about coaching people in the real world with real life. Like I'm someone who I'm just not someone who will live like a monk. I'm not just going to be like slow and steady. Yeah, I'm going to eat well all the time, like have little things. I'm like, I just like, you know, I'm not like, I'm going to jump out of aeroplanes and parachute. I'm just like, I'd rather diet hard and then party hard, or work hard, party hard, you know, all that stuff, live life fast. And lots of people are like that. Like, you know, I work in the week, but I want to enjoy my weekends. And it's like, you know, there's this typical rhetoric of a bodybuilding-esque personal trainer world that's like, eat out of Tupperware and eat a consistent diet Monday to Sunday. It's like, no, I don't want to do that. And most of your clients don't, and you won't be successful unless you find a way. I make this joke, Sarah, our head of nutrition at Matt Nutrition, the amount of alcohol she's able to fit into people's diet and still get results is amazing. And it's not from a perspective of like, we don't tend to, you know, sadly, the truth of the matter is there's no healthy amount of alcohol to consume, but we are just providing information. And then if that person says they want to drink, she's, you know, she's able to do that. So I make this joke, it's like, wow, your clients get results and they're still like on it. You know, this scenario of working with a client to just live a life that is how they want. So I want to get in shape for summer and I don't really care if I regain the weight. The key thing is that you've, you know, amazingly brought up a couple of times in the podcast is people's relationship with food. If you coach someone, leave them better than when they came to you. Don't put them through a process that leaves them with food issues, demonized foods, you know, a restriction mindset. They can only diet, but they can never do that. And they just go, you know, and binging. It's like, no, I'm not binging, but I'm just living life and I do gain a little bit of weight over time. But I, without damaging myself psychologically or physiologically, I diet that off when I want to look a certain way or feel a certain way or whatever.
Yeah, I love that so much. It's definitely a very different message, but it's quite refreshing to hear. I think you gave the example of kind of like if someone decides to train for a marathon one year, they're not going to sustain that level of fitness and total kilometers in the legs the following years. That doesn't make it a failure. They did their marathon.
Yeah, exactly. I think unless you want to, you know, take up running and do that for the rest of your life and you identify, I talk about identity-based behavior change, and I think it's a really powerful thing to try and understand and talk about. And you know, the best results are in, you know, with weight loss and weight loss maintenance over the long term are people who sort of change their identity, join a community, change the way they live long term. But that doesn't mean they might have some undulations in their body weight and their body fat over the time as well, but they're just able to manage that, and that's all good. But yeah, if someone wants to achieve a goal, like do a photo shoot or whatever, if they go back to the same weight before, and they're happy and it's not changed, you know, it's not worsened their life, like, it's not a failure. But unfortunately, it's just sold as a failure if you regain the weight. It's like, it's not. It's like, oh, look at that great thing, that great endeavor that you achieved, and you were able to apply some mental fortitude towards XYZ goal, and that happened to be body fat loss or muscle gain or doing a photo shoot or running a marathon, you know, for whatever fathomable reason when someone would want to do that.
Yeah, no, I can't imagine that either. No, that's so great, Martin. Thank you so much for sharing that. It's such an important message. People need to understand that there is another option out there. And I think that's just so refreshing because it's not really what we're hearing. So thank you so much for taking your time to come on and talk about the research on that.
I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
No, I did. I learned a lot again, just listening to the way you explain things. So thank you so much. Sure. I know we've touched on it a little bit already, but where can people find out a little bit more about yourself, your collection of companies, your podcast, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah. So I'm Martin Nutrition on all kind of social media platforms. I'm quite active as well. If people do want to ask me questions, I'm really happy to get back to people, clarify stuff, point them in directions. And then Mac-Nutrition Uni is obviously the course if there's coaches who want to get qualified and educated and get, you know, better results with clients and those kind of things. That's the best place to go there. And I've got an amazing team that can help you with like making decisions and you know, on whether it's the right course for you. We don't care about trying to convince you. We're not salesy. We'll let you come to us and tell you the truth of what you should do if it's the right thing for you. And then, yeah, I guess my podcast, thanks. Yeah, Not Another Nutrition Podcast. It's supposed to be short episodes. I talk too much. It's supposed to be like 10, 15 minute episodes, but I don't think I've ever done a 10 to 15, but, you know, like 20, 30 minute. And yeah, it's quite conversational. And if people want to go listen, yeah, that's on all of the regular podcast stuff, probably like you guys will be.
Perfect. Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah, everyone, if you're listening, make sure you go and check it out, because Martin, I've learned so much from you over the years. You've had a massive influence on my coaching career and I'm incredibly grateful for that. So yeah, if you haven't already, I'm sure you're more likely to have found your links than mine. But if you haven't already and you're not following Martin, then make sure that you go and do that after the episode.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me.
Thank you so much, Martin. I appreciate that, mate.